Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Hello, welcome to part two of Homo Sapiens. What we've got now is a lovely chat with Nick Dadani, star of stage and screen. He was famously in a show called Atypical. We've actually got some listener questions for him about Atypical, the Netflix show. He was also in Dear Evan Hansen, the film that just came out recently, and he's just been in Waitress on Broadway. He shot to fame as a gay Indian man doing stand-up comedy about being gay and Indian. He went viral, that put him on the map in Hollywood, and now the world is his oyster. Here is my lovely chat with him. How are you?
I'm doing well. Yeah. I'm in LA right now, calling in from my apartment. You're in the countryside, yeah? How are you doing? How is that life for you?
How is that life for me? I was born in London. I was born in the city. I grew up there, and I've always been told I was a Londoner. And then it's a tiny, tiny bit like coming out. I've slightly realized I'm not a Londoner.
Wow. And how did your family take it?
They won't speak to me.
Oh no.
No, they're fine with it. Yeah, I'm really happy being outside of the city. And I think that is probably to do with learning that intense stimulation isn't good for me in the long run, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That's very real. I feel like I have to leave LA at least every few months to stay sane.
Really?
Yeah.
It's an interesting mix, though, LA, isn't it? Because it's obviously a city. It's obviously the center of a lot of things. But at the same time, like, there's something a little bit more country about it that I really love. Like, it doesn't... When I've been to New York, like, I've been walking along the street and people have just walked into the back of me because I'm not walking fast enough for them. Like, it's so cutthroat. It's like, I can't, like, this is crazy. Whereas in LA, this is more of a relaxed vibe.
It's definitely a slower speed out here, which I like. And there's more space. It's much more spread out. You're not too far from the mountains or the beach or the forests, yes. You know. So it's definitely not New York. No one's going to walk into you. Someone might drive into you. But no one's going to walk into.
Is it true in LA? Someone told me this literally 15 years ago, and I've never actually asked anyone who lives in Los Angeles. Is it true there are people who jump in front of your car so that you hit them so they can sue you?
I'm sure it happens. I thankfully have not had someone looking for my insurance money do that to me. And I can't say I have done that. Myself, I have not.
Do you drive?
I do drive.
Yeah.
Poorly.
Oh, really? Same.
Yeah, really? Yeah. I think it's a gay stereotype that we're bad drivers, but, you know, stereotypes come from somewhere.
Why is it a stereotype that we're bad drivers, do you think?
I have no idea, but I see memes about it all the time. Bad drivers, we sit weird, we like iced coffee, you know, that whole
thing. I literally was going to say iced coffee.
Yeah.
There's this thing about gays liking iced coffee.
I don't know how that became a thing. I don't know how any of this stuff became a thing. Like, I drive a Jeep, and someone told me that Jeeps are gay.
Oh, totally. So gay. But that's because of, isn't that because of Queer as Folk?
Oh, okay, sure. That makes sense.
I used to have a Jeep as well, but I didn't have the Jeep, the sort of beachy, buggy-ish Jeep.
Got it.
And I said to my husband, I was like, oh, we could get that Jeep, i.e. because it was it was like the cheapest Jeep they do. And he literally just looked at me and went, we can't do that. And I was like, why? And he's like, queer as folk. And I was like, oh, didn't know that was a thing. I mean, I think you can have one of those in LA. They're like a summer car.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind that it's a gay car. I don't want a straight car, so.
What would a straight car be? Like a saloon?
Yeah, like, I don't even know what that is. So, yeah, probably that. probably like a Honda Civic.
Reliable.
Yeah. Yeah, or like a Nissan Sentra. That feels very straight.
Weirdly, one of the one things I used to do that felt vaguely heteronormative when I was younger is I used to go to this big car show with my dad.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really funny. It was like a sort of bonding experience.
That's lovely. So he wasn't like taking you to the car show to prevent homosexuality.
No, my dad was the one who bought me a doll when I wanted a doll when I was a kid.
Oh, well, that's nice. What kind of doll was it?
It was this blonde doll with long hair. She was very glamorous. I think she wore pink dungarees, and I think she was called something like Ruth or something. It was like a
Ruth.
And I have such a distinct memory, actually, of like, I wanted one of these dolls, and my dad went and got one with me. We got back to the house with the doll, and I was like, I want to go and show my neighbours over the road who also have this doll. I want to show them, the two girls over the road, that I had the doll as well. And my dad was like, oh, okay, well, they'll probably be in their pyjamas, like, getting ready for bed, but I'll take you over. So we went over, and I have such a distinct memory of the dad opening the door and there being a vibe of like, why are you here? Because everyone's trying to go to bed. But also, that was the first inkling I had that the doll was odd, because the dad, he was just giving me this vibe of like, why has he got a doll? And everyone in their house found it odd. Whereas in my house, no one had told me anything about it being. They were just like, if you want to do it, you do it.
How did the girls react, your friends?
I don't really have much memory of that other than, like, I think they were like, cool.
Isn't it funny how we remember, like, the traumatic, adjacent, negative thing, but then when someone's chill, we just completely forget about it? I do that too. I do that all the time.
So true, isn't it?
You know?
You remember the traumatic, but you also, a lot of your memories are formed from things that weren't said. You know what I mean? Mm. It's just the tone in a room that you can read.
Yeah.
And you just get a sense. Like, I think most of outsiderdom of any respect, it's not like, I think the numbers of times that people have actually walked up to people and given them a real piece of their mind about who they are is far, far less than feeling like an outsider from the sense of, or the lack of something, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially nowadays, where I think people are a little more hesitant of being, you know, someone who screams faggot at their car door, but, you know, will give you that look that makes you feel the hate.
Yes. But is that something you experience in Los Angeles, for example? Would you ever say you come up against that?
I feel like I live in a very gay bubble here, which I've worked very hard to build. And to protect myself. But every time I go back home to Arizona or Texas, definitely feel it. Growing up, I absolutely experienced a lot of that, a lot of homophobia, a lot of racism, a lot of bullying. But thankfully in my adult life, I've figured out a way to avoid the worst of it.
You grew up in Arizona, and presumably that was a very, well, you've spoken about the fact that it was a very white neighborhood, right?
Yeah, very white, very wealthy, very religious, very Christian. And my family was broke, brown, and Hindu. So we really didn't meet any of the prerequisites for living there.
And how did your family end up there?
My dad was an air conditioning salesman at the time. We lived in Dallas, and his job gave him the choice to move to Chicago or Arizona. And for some reason, they picked Arizona.
Do you remember any of those first moments of outsiderdom feeling different as your family when you got there?
Yeah, I don't know if I have like a memory of one specific moment, but I think very quickly I felt like an outsider. I mean, there were just very few people that looked like me at school. I was one of like a handful of black or brown kids. You know, I had this experience, which I think a lot of like children of immigrants have, is you took Indian food to school for lunch, and the reaction was less than ideal. you know, a lot of teasing and kids being grossed out by it, and me going home being like, I never want to eat this at school ever again, and then taking Lunchables for the next 5 years, which, you know, was definitely a poor nutritional choice, but protected me from shitty kids at school.
When you said that to your family, did they get it, or were they...
Yeah, they got it. Yeah, they got it. I mean, like, they had also experienced their fair share of discrimination and casual and less casual racism. And so they understood. They understood. I mean, they were bummed, but they understood.
Yeah, I know, because it's different for every family. But was it something you were able to talk about openly as a family?
We didn't really talk about things openly, like, at all. For the longest time, I would say recently that has changed as my sister and I, older sister and I, have become adults, forcing conversations. Mm. But growing up, not so much.
So hard, that stuff, isn't it? To try and get your parents to have conversations about that sort of thing.
Did your parents ever speak to you about racism growing up?
Never.
Never, wow.
It would, you know, like, if someone was a terrible person, they're a racist, would be thrown in. But there was never any kind of, like, that I can recall, a conversation like being like, we have to consider this. And, and let alone, you know, phase two, which is like the ingrained stuff that you don't even realize exists. I mean, I don't think I could even have that conversation now.
Really?
Yeah, like, I think...
Oh, with your parents.
Yeah.
Oh, got it,
Yeah, well, it's only my mum is still around now. You can now, would you say?
Absolutely, yeah. Now my family has conversations about everything, really? which is really cool. Yeah, we talk about racism, we talk about sexuality, we talk about drugs, we talk about mental health, talk about dating. You know, I share stories about my boyfriend, which is something I've never done ever before in previous relationships of mine. You know, I always kind of kept that stuff close to my chest.
And how do you bring it up?
I mean, I think it just kind of comes up in conversation. And it's like, what's going on in your life? And my mom likes to call me every day, so...
I love that.
I don't answer every day.
We'll never let her hear that.
She knows I don't.
Oh, really?
I mean, I'm not talking to her every day, so... no, but yeah, I just feel like it kind of comes up naturally now at this point. My older sister is a therapist, and so she's always trying to have a much deeper conversation and dig a little further into the subtext of a moment and talk about the broader implications and the psychological blah, 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 blah. It gets exhausting, frankly, but I love her regardless.
There can be a thing in families where when if someone asks how you are, you quite naturally can just say, oh, I'm fine, and not actually go into detail. So it's amazing that you're actually saying to your family what's going on and what's going on for you, you know?
Yeah, it is pretty weird. And it's not always met with like, you know, recently I was going through a bit of a depression, and I was telling my dad that I was, and he just like, I don't like that word, depression. Really? And then we had to have a whole conversation about it, and it wasn't like a agreeable conversation or like a easy conversation, but the conversation does happen, which is cool.
And also like giving people the tools with how you want to have that conversation so you can have better ones in future, you know? Yeah. Like with depression, not that I have experienced it myself, so I don't want to speak out of turn, but like with anything, mental health stuff, it's like...
You've never experienced depression in your whole life?
Not in a clinical sense.
Oh, interesting. You might be the first person I've met.
I was saying more, I think my flavor is more anxiety. Like if if I'm in an unsettled place, that's where I go.
Sure.
I've never had that thing of like, which I know depression is not this straightforward, but like, can't get out of bed, that listlessness thing. It's more like I feel overwhelmed by the future. That's when I know I need to take a time out, if that makes any sense.
That makes complete sense.
So sometimes like with family, you can, and that's all, you know, being able to verbalize that you get really concerned about the future, and that's anxiety, and that's, you know, even that language requires qualification with your family to say, I just want to tell you about this. I don't want you to fix it for me. I don't need you to tell me solutions. I just want to speak about it with you. So I'm being the real me, I suppose. And it's that stuff which I find really useful and enables conversations that can be a bit more fruitful. Because I think that generation above us and above us and above us, and we will be considered that generation to the next generation, are just a bit more buttoned up about what's really going on.
Mm-hmm. I feel like we already are that to Gen Z. Like, I feel like Gen Z folks are even more open and transparent than us in like a really significant way.
That's fascinating. Where do you see that? Where have you seen that happen? I'm trying to think of an example I've seen.
I just feel like most of the like young adults that I know just wear everything on their sleeves. And I think part of it is because they've just grown up sharing everything online since they were like infants. Mm. And so the sharing culture is much more ingrained into like the way they were brought up. And then also I think having millennials as parents, I think primed them to be able to have the tools, like you were saying, to talk about, and then the language to talk about it. And I do feel like some schools, not all schools, but some schools are also like becoming more proactive in talking about like mental health and sex and sexuality and racism and discrimination and social justice and all that stuff. And so I think the combination of those things has led, I don't want to generalize too much, but yeah, has led to just a much more open generation for better and worse.
Your family must be incredibly proud of you, I imagine.
They are. They're proud, and it's nice. Because I don't know if that was always the case.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Really? Do you think that they were behind with what you were doing before?
I don't know. Maybe that's not totally fair to say. At least I didn't feel it. I think I can say that. I think similar to what you're saying earlier, it's less about like the explicit stuff that's thrown at you and more of just like the environment you're in and how you're made to feel and feeling like an other, you know, and how that can affect the way you feel and operate and navigate. And so I definitely am feeling the pride a lot more and the love, which is really cool.
Because one of the things I wanted to ask you about is sort of time and context, because the narrative a little bit with you is like, if I Google you, right, is kind of like, you know, about 5-6 years ago, you kind of went viral with stand-up comedy about being a gay Indian. And that inevitably, you know, a lot of your really funny jokes were about like your mum's reaction, your dad's reaction, you know. And there's two things that I think are interesting there. It's like you're putting your head above the parapet, right? In a sense that there are, and there are not many other gay Indians doing that. So that for them is probably really scary. But were they supportive at that time?
Yes, they were. They were. A lot of the jokes came from, I was pulling from an earlier era. And by the time I was writing those jokes, there had already been a lot of progress, which I think is what allowed me to actually write the jokes. I think when you're in a thing and you're experiencing the negativity and the hardship, it's very difficult, at least for me. It's very difficult for me to make it funny. And I think once you're able to kind of grow a little bit and get some time, it's easier to make fun of it. So definitely they were supportive at the time, and have only become more conscious since.
But you never really came out in a traditional sense, did you?
To them, I did. Yeah. You did. I mean, to my family, yeah. You know, I sat them down, did the whole thing. You know, the joke that I have, you know, I said, "Mom, I'm gay." And she said, "Happy gay or AIDS gay," was very much based in the truth, where her first question was about HIV AIDS to me. And so, it was tough. I definitely did have kind of a traditional coming out publicly in terms of like to the world. I feel like I've kind of always been out. I guess that stand up was kind of just like my way of putting it on the record, I guess.
But your dad said lovely things to you as well, didn't he, when you came out?
I did. He did. He did. He was very lovely, surprisingly lovely. You know, I later found out that my mom had told him before I had a chance to, and he had a full week heads up to educate himself. And that's why he was able to react so well, which
interesting.
Part of me is upset by, cause like, that's not your thing to share, Mom. But also like it was very nice to have a positive reaction in that moment.
Do you think she was almost trying to protect you?
I don't know.
Bring it up next time you're at the dinner table.
Or not.
And do you feel that things have changed since your first stand-up outing?
For a little while, if you Googled gay and Indian, the results would be me and a bunch of porn. But now it's me and a bunch of other people. And so I think in that respect, things have changed. And I do think, I don't know, I feel like the younger generation, things are very different. Like, this is the Lil Nas X generation, right? Like, This is, there are kids who are 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 right now watching Lil Nas X do his thing. And it's going to be a formative thing for them. And you see the studies that come out showing the increased number of people that identify as LGBTQ. And even within that population, like, I think it's like a quarter of people, of queer people, identify as non-binary. And so there is really like, I think there has been a pretty significant change amongst younger people, amongst, you know, the folks that are still in positions of power, the older folks. I think the conversation has changed. I think people say the right thing more often than not. Have actions changed? Have systems changed? I don't actually know. Not really. I don't think so.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think so. At least from like my vantage point. Obviously, it's different depending on where you are and what industry you're in, what country you're in, what culture you're in.
Yeah, it's funny though, isn't it? Because the Lil Nas X generation, I sometimes have a fear about the kind of Madonnaification of Lil Nas X, which is that he will be regarded as something extraordinary, unicornish, like Madonna was, when actually Madonna was making some seriously blanket valid points, but it was being treated as like crazy talk, you know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I'm not sure if I fear that or if I love that. I don't know.
I suppose I'm always hoping for a time of more wholesale change, and actually It's not ever going to be that, because it's that heavy conservatism.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if the planet is still here in a couple hundred years, I think, like, if you take a snapshot of now and a snapshot of 200, 300 years in the future, like, I do think it'll be a markedly different culture. I do think gender will not be understood the same way as we understand it today. And race will not be understood in the same way it's understood today. And I think inherently, when you kind of dismantle both of those identities and structures and systems, then inevitably there's going to be wholesale change.
Do you, with what Hannah Gadsby did with Nanette and that concept of not sending yourself up, do you feel like your comedy will change and you wouldn't tell those kinds of jokes now because the world has also changed?
I would never dare to compare myself to Hannah Gadsby, the queen. But yeah, I think it would change. I think I mean, definitely. Yes. My comedy, if I were to, you know, go back into stand up and writing about my personal life, it would definitely change. It's the context has changed. The world has just changed so dramatically since, you know, my first set that I, you know, put on YouTube or whatever was before Trump. It was 2015. And so since then, I just think paradigms have shifted, at least in terms of consciousness. You know, like, I think environmentally we're more aware, racially we're absolutely more aware thanks to the Black Lives Matter movement. Like, I have experienced like a huge racial identity shift in the past year.
Because I know it affected you massively, which even that sounds glib to say, but
I think in the past year, since the protests following George Floyd's murder, my relationship to my own race has gotten, and my own culture has gotten, a lot stronger. I've become a lot more proud of who I am, where I'm from. I think I've also become more protective of me, my family, my story, my people. And I think my relationship with like racial power structures, like the institutions, has changed. Because, you know, Hollywood is a very white institution, and it's the one that I'm in. And for many, many years, I think I viewed my role in the industry as, I need to figure out a way to work for the industry. Mm-hmm. And I think the paradigm shift is I'm trying to do the best to see how can I make the industry work for me.
Yeah.
And I think that shift has dramatically impacted the way I approach everything. And I think that's a direct credit to the Black Lives Matter movement and the unapologetic like demand for equity and equality and respect. Honestly, at the end of the day, it really is about respect. I think my sense of self-respect has skyrocketed, I think, in the past year. And I think that's a direct result to what has happened.
That's brilliant. And tell me about the salon.
Yeah. So the salon is a group I co-founded a couple years ago. It's for South Asian artists and executives in entertainment. And it started out as an informal networking thing. Me and a couple of my South Asian buddies, an actor and a manager, we all knew different South Asian folks scattered across the industry, but they all didn't know each other. And like, there were a lot of folks I didn't know that Vinny knew, a lot of folks that Vinny knew that Bash didn't know. These are the co-founders. And so our goal was simply just to bring everyone together so that we could know each other. You know, really replicate what the Black and Latinx communities have done in Hollywood, which is organize and support and like bring the people who are in positions of power together with the sole purpose of like advancing each other's stories and getting our stuff made. And so just by bringing people together over dinner, films were financed and people got staffed on shows and actors were cast in projects. And, you know, it was really just the power of community in that sense at its most basic level, right? Like bringing folks together and connecting.
And you've had amazing people come in and support you and talk to you, right?
Yeah, no, it's been really great. This year we launched our mentorship program, which is specifically for the next generation of talent. Because for the beginning part, we were really focused on the folks who are already established, who already hold some influence that they could wield to help the community. And now we're really also trying to expand our work to identify and support the next generation of talent, mostly behind the camera. So it's writers, directors, executives, producers, so that we can build a pipeline so that in 5 years, we have 100 alums of the program who are all in community with each other, who have connections and resources that they need to then create the shows and movies and podcasts and plays that we can all be a part of and share our culture and our identities and stories with the world.
And because Mindy Kaling is part of the mentorship program, is that correct?
She was one of our guests to drop in. So our mentors are folks, we have 23 mentors who are in 5 different tracks: writing, acting, directing, and executive leadership and producing. And they're all folks that are working, who have been working for quite some time. And then we have our guests drop in. So we have folks like Mindy, like Hassan Minhaj. We have Kalpen dropping in. And these folks are made available to our mentees privately, off the record, so that they can have conversations. Have conversations, just ask the questions that they want to ask and you know, commiserate over shared experiences, but also get into the nitty-gritty. You know, I think a lot of times, if we're even convened in public settings, the conversation is always like kind of top level, like about representation and just like kind of very like a lot of platitudes. But these conversations, we really get into the craft as well. Like, yes, we talk about representation and racism and all that stuff, but we really get into like, what is it, you know, like to write a script? What is your process? What, how do you interact with actors as a director? How do you navigate executives at a network? Right. And we really get into the weeds of it, which I think is
brilliant,
which is so, I'm so jealous of the mentees that they're getting this. I'm an unofficial mentee of the program. I'm like taking notes every time they speak. I'm asking questions that I personally want answered.
Cause why not? Like, where everyone's learning till the day you die.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. There's so much I don't know. There's so much. And to be able to speak to these folks that have really, you know, broken the barriers so that people like me can have a career. It's pretty cool to be able to talk to them.
Now, Nick, it came up in conversation. It wasn't quite conversation. It came up in Instagram chat with one of our listeners who's a massive fan of yours, who sent me some questions for you.
Ah, okay.
Which is really sweet. One of them was about Atypical.
Okay.
And saying, I'd like to know how much fun he had playing such a rampantly hetero character. It always felt rather subversive to me, and I've loved it that the show is so queer positive. So anything he's got to say about that would be interesting. What was that like, Nick?
It was a delight to play a straight horny boy because I got to like tap into a side of me that I didn't quite know was there.
Yeah.
And it was really fun observing my straight male friends over the years to just take notes and see how they move and interact and how they dance. I remember for the audition, there was like a thing where I had to dance. So I literally just watched one of my straight friends. I just said, it was my roommate at the time. And I'm like, can you just like dance just as if you're in a club? I just want to know what that looks like. That's and I just, funny. I copied exact whatever he did. I did in the audition room.
Really?
Yeah.
What was that? What were the hallmarks of that straightness?
You know, there's like a boldness to it.
Interesting.
Bold is a kind word. There's a assertiveness to it, you know, in the body language. It's much more just like leaning forward, and it's a lot of like spread legs, and it's just like this like unearned confidence, and a little bit of disregard for other people. I mean, I don't, that's a little harsh, but you know, very fun to play though. Very fun to play.
What a lovely chat with Nick. Just a lovely, calm, soothing presence who very gently is creating change. I love him. I love him for that. Thank you so much for listening. If you've got any comments, hello@homosapienspodcast.com. Same goes for if you've got agony uncles, hello@homosapienspodcast.com. Get in touch, stay connected at Homo Sapiens on Instagram, as they say, Facebook at homosapienspodcast.com. Next week, it's a biggie. We're talking to the person who is taking the literary world by storm, none other than Sean Fay, author of the bestseller, The Transgender Issue, An Argument for Justice. It is a wonderful chat with Sean. If you don't follow her on Instagram, she's very funny, so go and follow her as well to get really under the skin. But she's been named as like one of the top books of the year in everything that I've been reading anyway. Closer, you know, Heat. And yeah, can't wait for you to hear it. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Loads of love. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Powered by Spirit Studios.